The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
It's 11 minutes after 6, 2 weeks. 2 weeks left before the counting begins, the selection begins. And then we're in for, what, another month of, election counts and recounts, and then there'll be GOP and Democratic suits, and the lawyers are going to be involved. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting end of the year. That is for sure. You know it's going that direction, right? Any hope that it's going to be a no-drama llama kind of election, I don't think is going to be happening. Although the betting markets are very much in favor of President Trump, and daily tracking polls seem to show him getting an edge over the pajama llama Kamala, or you know, whatever the case might be. But that's the way it's working out so far. But, of course, what really matters is the count, It's not a matter of if you have the votes. It's if you have the ballots. Remember, Democratic operative once termed that. But anyway, we can have that kind of conversation on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. All right. Now here's one driving pebble in my shoe this morning. And I just want to find out how many people you see do this one. So I end up pulling out of Delta Waters on Highway 62 this morning. And I swear, if you have somebody behind you and you're turning left, now I'm always going to turn left and then I'm going to move to the right lane so I can go to the radio station. It's my standard route to work every day. It's what I do. Sometimes I'll change it around just because I don't want to be totally bored with the drive in. I'll do a few changes. How did we get to this point where about 90% of the drivers don't turn into the closest lane, which is what the law says, which is what you supposedly learned to do when you took your driver's test? You're supposed to turn into the lane closest. If you're in the far left lane, you turn into the far left lane as you're turning left, right? And then you signal and move over. That is the law. How many times are the people behind you, when you actually follow the law and you turn left into the far lane, say, I'm going to just get around you, and they go all the way to the right so they can pass you on the right? How often do you see that? That's the pebble in my shoe this morning. Turn closest into the lane. I know it's not the most important thing. That's just the most irritating thing on a daily basis. And then you try to turn right. You follow the law, and then you signal to show your intent. And then you can't get over because of the moron that just turned into the far other lane. Just about every time there's someone that does that. Why is it? Maybe we should just change the law. Just turn to the whatever lane you want to. Then I'd be okay, I guess. What's the point? Anyway, 770-563-3770-KMED. By the way, if you're listening in California this morning, you should be feeling a little bit better this morning because Pacific Power just put out a press release today. California climate credit to appear on customers' power bills. Pacific Power customers in California can expect to see a credit of $174.25 on their October electricity bill as part of California's efforts to fight climate change. Okay, I would like to correct that. As part of California's efforts to financialize and send grifters to their politically favored industries, normally wind and solar companies, and will claim that it fights climate change. The California Climate Credit is a direct result of the state's nation-leading cap-and-trade program that requires polluters to pay for climate pollution. No, it requires you to pay for carbon dioxide. And if you're going to take California's definition of climate pollution, which is CO2, that means that California thinks that you, since you breathe out CO2, they consider you carbon to restrict, too. I mean, honestly, if you take it to its logical conclusion, all right. And but anyway, this is due to the nation's leading cap-and-trade program requiring polluters to pay for climate pollution. Credits are distributed in April and October. In other words, this is money that was stolen from other people who actually produced useful energy that was actually solid and on all the time. Energy which was available when they actually needed it, rather than when Mother Nature Danes to provide it, which is the way the state of California is forcing Pacific Power to operate, both in California and in Oregon. Now, I don't think that we have our climate credits here in Southern Oregon. I don't think we get them, though. But the California Climate Credit is designed to help customers as the state transitions to a low-carbon future, meaning that intermittent and chaotic and expensive. Each year, the state issues a limited number of greenhouse gas emissions allowances in line with California's goal of reducing its overall emissions to 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. There's a hell of a lot more people in California now than there was in 1990. So that is what they're doing. So everything about this, it's a financial grift. That's what they're talking about. When they say, well, this is helping us in the transition because your electric rates have been soaring in California and in Oregon, too, for that matter. Soaring. And they're trying to make you convince yourself that for some reason, it's, well, you know, this energy is so great, this wind and solar is so great, that we have to charge you more for it. And we have to give you climate credits, you know, some money back in to make you feel better. But, you know, this grift is going everywhere. OregonCapitalChronicle.com this morning. Financial markets see green in forests. David Bugney's property near Estacada, Oregon, it reads. He owns 100 acres of forest, which he has entered into a carbon project with the company Forest Carbon Works. No man-made machine on Earth can better capture planet-warming carbon dioxide from our atmosphere than a healthy forest. And the most effective carbon-storing forests in the world are the wet, dense, giant conifer forests of the Northwest. For more than a century, these forests have been heavily logged, supporting a vast timber industry. But companies behind a new and growing market force are hoping to bank on the money-making potential of Oregon forests that are left intact, doing what they've always done, absorb and store carbon. In other words, they're promoting the financial grift. They're talking about, oh, there's a market for these forests to be a carbon sink. It's not a real market. It's a market only in the respect that the government makes it impossible to do things that actually produce carbon dioxide, which also includes you living, I would remind you. And so this is a fake market. The carbon credit market is a fake market. It is only a government-created market. It would never exist without government twisting your arm and saying, you know, you're sinning by actually doing something with energy that people can actually use. Whether it's natural gas, whether it's, coal, whether it's diesel, gasoline, whatever. And so since you are sinning, you are able to buy, kind of like the Catholic Church, you're able to buy forgiveness. You buy forgiveness. That's all the carbon credit markets are. That's all it is. And then they sell this. This is a grift, and then the Wall Streeters who can't actually produce anything of value. All we can do in the United States right now is financialize everything. This is just another example. Another example of the green BS, carbon credits. It's not a real market. It's a fake market created to push a government agenda. Just remember that. So remember that when you're cashing your $172 credit, bill credit down at Pacific, Pacific Power customer in Northern California. It's a fake job, but they're trying to make you feel better about the fake job. That's all that is. Rather than working on actually having power that is there when you need it, rather than Mother Nature deigns to provide it. All right. 770-563-3770-KMED. Happy to take your calls and what's on your mind this morning. Pebble in your shoe Tuesday. This is the Bill Meyer.
And I'm on KMED.
623. Appreciate you being here. And it's open phones the first hour for Pebble in your shoe Tuesday. We're going to talk with Mark DeYoung. Mark DeYoung wants to make a change, wants to be the next Josephine County treasurer. And there's been some brouhaha over in Joe County about the incumbent. But we'll have a little conversation about that with Mark. I'll let him tell the story because he tells it better than I do, all right? But anyway, what is on your mind for Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday? Vicky's here. Vicky, you say you have your sandals are so big they're just filled with pebbles this morning. Go ahead. What are you thinking?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even walk.
Okay. Oh, boy. Well, we don't want you to be lame. Let's take a few pebbles out. What's going on?
Okay. So pebble number one. I filled out my ballot last night, mm-hmm. and, I don't get why they're not doing the secret ballot envelope inside. And so many times when you get paperwork, well, I get stuff in the mail, paperwork, they're trying to save, you know, the planet by not using too much paper. Well, this isn't...
Usually it goes by making something less convenient for you, is what is really right. What it means. But you're right. Supposed to feel really good. Kind of like the, you know, the climate... You know, the climate refund that Pacific Power gives you in Northern California. But I digress.
Right. All right. Well, I just believe that it's not a secret if everybody can see. And they say, oh, well, when the only people that see it is the people that take it out of the envelope mm-hmm. and count your ballot. Well, I don't want them seeing my name until they're done.
Really? You know, I'm kind of surprised that you're kind of bent out of shape over that one. Of all the things that have been changed, the getting rid of the ballot secrecy thing did not bug me all that much, but I'll reconsider that. I'll reconsider that.
Okay. Pebble number two.
All right.
The electric. My sister lives in California, and, you know, we talk every single day, and I've heard her electric going way up, you know, no breaks, no discounts. Mm-hmm. Now, the discount that they're giving them, the credit they're giving them, how about instead of for CO2, they give it to them because they keep turning their power off.
Time.
They have rolling blackouts.
So every time there's a rolling blackout, there should be a discount then, a refund, right?
Exactly, for the inconvenience.
The inconvenience refund. But you have to understand, though, that working a power grid under the California Public Utilities Commission or the Oregon Public Utility Commission is really about never having to say you're sorry.
Well, yeah, I've talked to so many people. Like, we up here in the Applegate a week ago, it literally went off last Wednesday night three different times. And normally I try and be very respectful to the people that answer the phones because I know it's not their fault, mm-hmm. but it's ridiculous.
Did they tell you what was going on in the Applegate last week, what was causing that? Because if it was just the same situation with old lines running through the trees and then we get windy and rainy conditions, then it's kind of hard to work that.
Relay switch or something went out or got stuck.
Oh, they had to okay.
Okay, so that was pebble number two.
Okay, I'll give you one more pebble, and then I got to go, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Pebble number three is,
Well, think about that and call me back, okay? How about that?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. See, you always got to write down all your pebbles. I know when you got a lot of pebbles, it's kind of hard to get through. Let me go to Matt. Matt has pebbles, I would imagine, too. What's on your mind this morning, man? Good to hear from you.
Man, my pebble's the size of a nuclear reactor, and it's a good pebble.
Oh,
okay. But I just have to tell you, you're on fire this morning with this carbon credit. What an absolute scam.
Now, you are a financial guy, so you understand this grift even more than I do. Or, you know, I'm just kind of reading what financial people say about it. You are one of those financial guys. So why don't you explain how this game works, huh?
Well, first of all, I have to point out something. One of our local politicians, Brian De LaGrange, said when he was running for county commissioner a few years ago, that he said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could just sell the carbon credits from our trees instead of cutting them all down? And I'm like, I was thinking to myself, he's a giant dude. You know, he's like 6'7", 6'8". I'm looking, I'm going, like, his head really is in the clouds.
Uh-huh. But you see, that's exactly what they're trying. See, this is the excuse. This is the substitute for deindustrializing and making your people poor and poor and putting them in servitude to the system. Because this kind of goes right down to the whole gangrene. We want to turn Southern Oregon into a little theme park, that Portland liberals can come down and visit every now and then. It shouldn't be doing anything constructive, anything productive. Why would you want to do that, Matt?
You know, people have already forgotten. Solar and wind is a scam. It's an absolute scam, and the only one getting rich is the government and China. Okay, they're the ones getting rich. It's a scam. If you want them on your house because you want to reduce your electric bill, fine. It's gotten cheap enough now. I think the lifetime value actually kind of can work in your favor in that regard. Plus, in the case of an emergency, I can see where it'd be nice to have solar panels. You wouldn't need a generator.
Yeah, as long as your system allows it to power your house if the grid goes down. A lot of other people have systems that do not have battery storage, and they don't have the ability to take power out of it when, you know, when the grid itself is actually done, because the contract is that you sell the power to Pacific Power, right?
Right.
If I understand correctly.
Look who's flying below the radar is Al Gore. Al Gore was working with Goldman Sachs and some of the big Wall Street banks that we had to bail out back in the day to create a carbon credit trading market, literally trading carbon, this nebulous thing floating around the air, and they want to have a market where they can get more commission, they can get more fees. I think about it, and I think, God, America, please, convince me that you haven't lost your mind that you would buy into this thing of literally selling, you know, carbon molecules on a futures market.
Now, see, you're a stock guy. You're a stock guy, and, you know, you actually look for real value in the companies that you will suggest, right? You know, I've known, you know, about how you have worked this kind of stuff. But what we've gotten to at this point under the guise, and tell me if you think I'm wrong about this, under the guise of carbon and reducing carbon, everything's been about deindustrializing the United States. We're supposed to deindustrialize so that India can industrialize and spew carbon, I guess. You know, that must be, you know, kind of the situation. So under the guise of deindustrialization, Wall Street can't find anything that's actually valuable, or at least not nearly enough that is valuable. So they have to financialize everything and create BS markets like this with the help of government. Isn't that really what we're talking about?
Yes, because it creates trillions of dollars of income for the banks. Look, I'm not against capitalism. I support it 100%, but I'm not for crony capitalism. I'm not for socialized capitalism where big business gets in bed with the government and then, you know, basically closing small business and then farming everybody who's owned those businesses into working at Home Depot. I'm not for any of that. But this whole thing with the carbon credit, think about this. The price of everything is determined mostly by supply and demand. Who's doing the calculation of what we have an underabundance of carbon dioxide and an overabundance? Is there going to be like a farm report that gets issued four times a year where, like the movie Trading Places, where everybody's waiting in front of a monitor with bated breath for some government bureaucrat to come on TV and tell us, oh, carbon is 4% higher over the last 3 months than it had been previously.
The government carbon futures market, the value of carbon has gone down because carbon has become sequestered more in the ocean right now, and so not worth as much as it was. You know, and you start looking at them as the stocks, right? The same as stocks in actual companies that produce something.
Except they'll be highly leveraged, where you could put up $1,000 and control 10,000 units of whatever they're going to call it. It's absolutely insane, and I pray that America's smarter than this. But I have to throw this out. Nuclear is the way forward. I was convinced when I knew that Bill Gates was starting to build these smaller reactors in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And then, over the last month or so, Oracle, Amazon Web Services, which is Amazon, Google is going to be building a fleet of these things. And so this is, other than for retail use, you are seeing the beginning of the end for wind and solar. I know they're talking about building something with windmills off Oregon. And everybody who lives in the state needs to fight this tooth and nail. I don't want to see it off our coast. We have one of the most majestic coasts anywhere on the face of the planet. We should not be littering. I don't care if they say, oh, we're going to be far enough offshore, we can't see them.
You have to understand, though, you know how Oregon is always used as the test case for every idiotic progressive idea which comes around,
yeah,
right? I mean, and then we're supposed to export it. I think the reason why Oregon and California have been so festooned with wind and solar and with the subsidies is that ultimately it is to demonstrate how it doesn't work, and to scare us so that we'll finally come to our senses and approve nuclear again. Because in Oregon, you're not allowed to do it. The voters stupidly voted against it a number of years ago, put it in the Constitution. Remember?
You're right, but I will tell you this. They may have said, no, we don't want it, but they'll be piping that electricity in another 10 years when Bill Gates and some of these other billionaires make a trillion.
Yeah, and then Bill Gates makes bank again. You know, he makes bank first by scaring you about carbon dioxide, and then he makes bank again by, oh, and here is the solution with nuclear power to solve the problem that I screwed you over with by pushing the carbon scam agenda. Right?
Bill,
he makes it on both sides.
No different than COVID. Create the disease and then miraculously show up with the cure. And I have to throw one more pebble in. Fifth Avenue is cutting off two lanes of car traffic because they say 70% of the traffic there is on foot. So they're doing the same thing in Medford that they're doing on Fifth Avenue in New York City.
All right. Amazing. Appreciate the call. Hey, I'm going to give you a real American salute. Good call. All right, Matt. All right, Matt, put on your crown. I'll take one more call, and then everybody that's on hold, I will definitely get you because it is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. We want to make sure and get you all on. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Holly Morton, Josephine County.
Hey, Holly, what's up?
Pebble in my shoe is uninformed voters at this point. Are you kidding me? People who say, I can't vote because they're going to cheat anyway. My vote isn't going to count. You know, everybody has to get out and vote. That just drives me crazy. Or I can't vote for Trump. You know, I just can't vote for Trump. Trump is one guy on the ballot. There are a whole lot of extra ones. And if you don't vote for Trump, that's a vote for Kamala Harris. Good grief. Are you kidding me?
I would also advise people that given that Oregon has signed on to the National Popular Vote Compact, that if there ends up being an issue in which they want to give the Electoral College vote to the people with the greatest popular vote, there's a chance that President Trump actually gets the national popular vote this time. So
there's a really good chance.
Yeah.
If it, there's going to be massive cheating, in my opinion. You know, everything I've heard from the, professionals in the election integrity.
But that doesn't negate sitting on your butt, though. That doesn't okay it. It doesn't okay it.
And the other thing that drives me absolutely crazy is when you try to talk to somebody and they say, I can't talk about politics. I just can't talk about politics. We are fighting for our very lives right now. You better just open up your mouth and talk about politics. If you have any questions, admit it.
Yeah, well, politics, you might not be interested in politics, but I assure you that the politicians have you on the menu. So you better talk with them about it. Good point, Holly. Good point. 6:35. And okay, now... And now I will take my news break here, and then we'll continue with your calls. It's Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, 2 weeks before the election selection day. What's on your mind? We'll do it next.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
6:39 on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. I have decided to vote no on the RCC bond, and I wanted to get your opinion to say if you agree with me or if you think that I did the wrong thing. Now, I've already voted. I've got my ballot in the back. I've already put it in the sealed envelope, et cetera, et cetera. I voted no on 17-119, even though I support what RCC does. And I know it sounds really hypocritical, but I wanted to explain... You know, if you're thinking that it is hypocritical to say you support RCC and the mission, but then you vote against this this bond. This is the reason why I voted against it, because it is a district-wide combined county vote. I don't think it is a wise way of going about it. I don't think it's fair, because in essence, you have the entire RCC district dominated by Jackson County, but a Jackson County yes vote can end up squashing Josephine County's vote. So essentially, Jackson County could choose for Josephine County to pay higher taxes. I don't think that is a fair way of going about this. I think the way it should have been done is two separate decisions in each county, and that both would have had to make it work. Both would have had to pass to make that bond go. And so I had to vote no. In good conscience, I couldn't say that a Jackson County vote should be telling Josephine County what to do, or vice versa. If Josephine County was a much larger county, and I just couldn't do that. Not that I don't think that RCC does a good job. It does do a good job. Now, Michael Shaw on my Facebook page last night, you know, he's calls the show quite frequently. He said, well, it wouldn't be fair then for Jackson County to pass the bond and continue to pay the 13 cents per thousand and then spend money on the Josephine County campus. Well, Michael, the way I would look at that is that they should just spend the money on the White City campus if you're going to do something. I think that's how you end up fixing it. Now, I understand I ended up talking with the president a few weeks ago about this, and they wanted to do some improvements and expansion on both campuses in order to have people driving, not having to drive. Like if you wanted to take a certain type of course, you don't have to drive from Shady Cove to Grants Pass or from Cave Junction to White City, depending on what you're trying to study for. So I just wasn't a fan of the way this was structured. It's just my opinion. So I said no on 17-119. And yet I like what Rogue Community College does, but I didn't think this was a the fair way of going about it. That's just me. 770-5633. Tell me what you're thinking. Lawrence here, Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday morning.
Good morning, sir. Yeah, 2 weeks ago last Friday, I injured my knee pretty bad. I went to my own doctor, but they couldn't see me. So then I went to an urgent care. I won't say where necessarily, but and so I walked in, and there was one person sitting in there, and I walked up the counter, and he said, well, we're dealing with this other person now. You'll have to wait. So I waited 10 minutes, walked up to the counter, and said, they asked, what is your need? And I said, well, I injured my knee, and I'd like to be able to be seen by a doctor. And they said, oh, I'm sorry. We have met our quota for today of walk-ins. Therefore, you have, and that was at 4 o'clock Friday afternoon. Oh. You have to come back on Monday. That's immediate care. To me, that means you take care of people. But anyway,
you know, I'm wondering, Lauren, if that's a strange thing to say. We have met our quota for walk-ins. Of course, I don't know. Maybe that means that they were getting ready to close and they couldn't take any more walk-ins without overtime. I don't know.
They said they were open until 6, and it was 4 o'clock then. And at that point in time, there was only two other people in the waiting room. But
yeah, my experience, though, the few times I've gone into urgent care over the last few months is that much like the rest of the medical system, it's getting thin. Have you noticed that it's getting thin as far as sometimes the people involved in there or how many people are there?
Yeah, that's true. And then finally, 2 days later, I got to see my own doctor. And then a week later, I got to have a shot in my knee, and that didn't do any good. So now next week, I've got to see a knee surgeon down in Ashland. And, of course, I live out here in Eagle Point, but anyway, we're going to try to figure out what's wrong with the whole thing. But, yeah, that's my pebble today, and I just had to call and tell you that. I've told a number of people that, and they said, what? Urgent care couldn't see you? Wait till Monday? And so it's surprising.
You know, there are urgent cares open on the weekend. Did you check those out?
Well, I didn't. They suggested to me that I drive down to South Medford.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest at the Providence.
Providence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, no, that's that. But I didn't want to keep driving. I mean, I was already hurting really bad heart. And anyway,
that's true. You got a bad knee. How are you driving, right? Okay.
That's right.
Was it your left knee or your right knee?
It's right knee.
Okay. Yeah, it's a driving knee. Okay. So I get that. I get that. You wanted to nurse that along. Thanks for sharing your pebble. Boy, I'm sorry to hear about that. I can't say I'm really surprised, though. 770-5633. Let me go to Chris. Chris is in Medford. Hello, Chris. Good to have you on. What's on your mind?
Well, first off, I agree with you about the ballot measure that.
Oh, about 17-119. I really appreciate what RCC does. I don't like the idea that that one county can force the other county to do something. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with that. But I wanted to say. So here we are 2 weeks out from the election, not quite, and we still have not received our ballots. Well, this happened when Trump was running for president. And I had to go and raise a big stink and you know, explain to them that I had not gotten a ballot.
Is that this year, Chris, or another year?
This was another year, but okay. I feel like I'm in the same place this year that I'm going to have to go down there and say, no, I haven't gotten a ballot. Well, there was some address change. Who changed the address? Oh, well, we don't know. And it came down to it was changed by the post office, who was being heavily subsidized at the time. But I have not, and my father has not received our ballot.
Huh.
And that's kind of scary to me.
Well, they dropped on Fridays when they were actually put in there. I ended up receiving mine on Monday, yesterday, and a lot of other people I know got it on Saturday, I guess, depending on where they are in the distribution chain. Where do you live, Chris? What area are you in?
Just behind North Medford High School. And I've been checking our mail every day because we know the ballots are supposed to be coming.
Yeah, I would venture a guess. call me back tomorrow if you haven't received it by today. I would be very surprised if you didn't get it today. Okay? All right?
Just having not received it in the past, and there was some ridiculous made-up reason, I think it's that little thing where you decree who you are on the ballot. I don't know.
Yeah. I've not been able to come up with any evidence that would support that. But yeah, when you see it, well, if it happens more than once, then you start getting really suspicious, right? I understand that.
Well, exactly. It's not like it hasn't happened before. And we had to, I went through fist fights with them to get my ballot. And finally, they, you know, reissued my ballot and I re-registered and did all that good kind of stuff. But it seems very one-sided, and it seems ridiculous because the biggest ticket on the item is President Trump, who's not going to win Oregon.
Mm-hmm. But no, he's not going. He's most likely not going to win Oregon. But on the other hand, it is important then to be on that, not only for his popular vote totally, in case the popular vote ends up becoming an important thing, but also for all the other down ballot people. Best of luck. Let me know if that hasn't happened, okay? Or get in touch with Chris. Have you called Chris Walker over at the Jackson County Elections thing? She's very responsive. I know that.
Okay, that's good to know. No, I haven't talked to her, and I didn't really know what direction to go.
Yeah, I just go to the county clerk, and she is a very, very service-oriented and very good at responding. She gets back to people. Either she or some of the crew, you know, down there are very good if you're having problems with that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Good luck on that. Let me go to Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Yeah, I wanted to talk about carbon credits, but let's do a shorty on the ballots and RCC. I was told that the ballots, if we mail them in, will not get canceled postmarked at Medford. They have to go all the way up to Portland and process there before they actually get that postmark cancellation.
Yeah, and this is one of the few times that the Daily Courier and I agree on much of anything. Even the Daily Courier, the Grants Pass Daily Courier, which I usually use as whatever they say to do, do the opposite, and you're probably doing the right thing. I look at them as a contrary indicator, you know. But even the Daily Courier said, don't mail your ballots. Take them over to the election drop boxes and do it that way. Even they say that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then with RCC, if you increase your customer base, you increase your income. So what percentage of tuition, which is expensive, goes toward brick and mortar or anything else to do with educating our RCC students?
Well, it appears that given the penchant for putting out bond levies with all education, I mean, and this is also any public school, every public school organization that seems to do this, doesn't seem to take anything out of operating and put it aside for capital improvements or repairs. It seems that everything, you know, you want to fix something or you build something new, you can't take it out of any money that you've taken out of your operating expenses over the last few years. You always have to go for more, right? That's the way they kind of designed it.
What a business model, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Could you imagine if McDonald's were given that McDonald's has been in the news? If McDonald's said, "Yes, we here at the old Golden Arches, we want to build some more company-owned franchises here, some company-owned businesses, but we're going to raise the price of the Big Mac for you right now, so that we can build some more restaurants." See, that's the public school model of it. You know, if we need to expand something, we haven't saved any money, nor have we repaired it. Well, look at how many of the school districts here had to float bond measures to replace the heating and air conditioning. Remember Phoenix a few years ago and some of the other ones?
Right? Oh, yeah. 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 You know, you would think infrastructure and maintenance and building would be part of that revenue-generating income for tuition.
But I would imagine a lot of this is due to teachers' unions, because if they would see big reserves, that's a pay raise that doesn't go into the teachers' union's pocket. Just saying.
Yeah.
Could be.
Probably so.
Could be.
Yeah. On carbon credits, you know, I don't remember a lot that I learned in seventh grade, but I think I recall biology, where the trees take in the carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
They do put out oxygen, but that carbon is converted to wood.
Yes.
And if we cut a tree down and lumber it and mill it and turn it into our house, doesn't our house sequester the carbon?
As a matter of fact, it does.
Cool. let's cut some trees and build some houses.
Okay, so then all you have to do then is convince the financial grifters on Wall Street to consider your car, or your house rather, a permanent carbon sink, as long as it doesn't burn down. Now, if you burn the house down, you know, then all of a sudden you can't use it as a carbon sink any longer.
I guess then you go into the red instead of the black, right?
Yeah, that's right. I love that. Thanks for the call, Bob. 652. If you're on hold, I will get right to you on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, 770-5633, 770-KMED. By the way, people have been asking me about the judicial race for position 11 in Medford or in Jackson County, and I'll give you an opinion on that, and it may cut against some people's grain, but I do have an opinion on where to go with that particular vote. It's the only contested judicial race we have, which, of course, is another problem that we'll discuss.
We're thrilled to
company for your silver and your gold.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
655 770-5633 on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Mary Lynn writes me this morning, says, Bill, thanks for your voting insight on Facebook the other day. I listened to your judge interviews. Which did you choose? I appreciate you asking, Mary. A lot of people have been poking me about this, and I wanted to kind of put it in context, all right? I ended up choosing Johan Pietila for Circuit Court Judge Position 11, and here's why. I do not like governors choosing our judges because it is a judicial scam that has been going on for way too long, and in my opinion, we have to break the back of progressive governors choosing all of our judges. And they almost have and most of them have been appointed by progressive judges. Most of our judges, rather, have been appointed by Oregon governors, and they've all been Democrats over the last 40-something years. Now, you got to remember, Position 11 in the Jackson County Circuit Court is newly created, just created. This is a brand new one. What a perfect time to have a couple of candidates duking it out and really talking about the issues, the legal issues. But Governor Kotek, end of August, like 2 months before the election, before there would be an election, could just have an open election, had to make an appointment of Judge Matthew Rowan. And by the way, I interviewed Judge Matthew Rowan. Seems to be a perfectly qualified guy. But here is the situation with this. The governors have been choosing most, if not almost all, of our judges. In fact, last time I looked here in Jackson County, about 85% of them have ended up being appointed. And the way it works is that the scam that goes in there, the governor appoints the judge usually about 3 months, 3 or 4 months before the next election. So that way someone gets appointed and then they get to run as an incumbent. And the kiss of incumbency is so incredibly powerful. And then Governor Kotek or Governor Brown or Governor Kulongoski or Governor Kitzhaber has ended up choosing most of the judges that we have. Not to say that we have bad judges. There could be some. All right. Could be some. But and I'm not trying to cast aspersions here. But the governor, along with the legal community, works really hard to make sure that you never get a chance to vote on a judge. Because once a judge is in, selected by the liberal, progressive Democrat governor, there will almost never, ever, ever be a challenge of a sitting judge. So every time, almost every time, we've had a couple of exceptions here. I know that Judge David Hoppe got in on a straight election. I know Judge David Orr got in on an actual competitive election. But almost all of the other judges got in by being appointed by the governor, the Democrat governor. Wash, rinse, repeat. Now, I would imagine that Governor Kotek, getting ready to select a judge for Jackson County, is not looking for someone that I would tend to be favorable. You know, they're probably not looking for a judge that would be thinking more like you and me. I would imagine that Governor Kotek selecting a judge is picking someone who is more like Peter Sage. Okay? And we'll just kind of leave it at that. Or making Peter Sage happy and making the Democratic Party happy. Now, that may be unfair here because, I'd probably be saying the same thing if Johan Pietila ended up getting appointed by Governor Kotek. I don't want the judges picked by the governor. I want us picking the judges. And that's why I'm voting for Johan Pietila. You got to put a you got to send this shot across the bow. You have to break the back of the governor doing this scam. And gosh darn it, you know, this is the scam that even you talk to attorneys behind the scene. Yeah, everybody knows this is how you do it. You don't get elected. And then it's like you're there almost permanently. And then you end up, you can possibly move up the food chain. And so you end up finding people, judges that are picked by the governor that end up being in the Court of Appeals, getting on the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. And then every time your rights come up before these courts, they're always shot down. Don't tell me there can't be a connection on this, all right? This is not to cast an aspersion on Judge Matthew Rowan. Seems perfectly qualified. I talked with him a couple of weeks ago. But I don't want anybody, I don't want any additional people in there picked by our governors. I want we the people picking our judges. Okay? 770-5633. Let me go to Greg. Hello, Greg. Good to have you on. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Morning, Greg.
So I got a whole shoe full of pebbles, but I suppose I better keep it short. government by the lowest common denominator is what I call it. Example, you got a number to call to get permission to run your weed whacker, your chainsaw, etc. Okay, I can understand that. We all could use some guidance at times.
And boy, wouldn't you know that government experts are just the people to help you out, Greg.
Oh, my goodness. Now the real problem, though, is the number you call to see if it's a burn day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we live on some acreage out here at the South Slope. It's a brushy, burned-up situation. Been here for many years. Every minute that I can burn, I need to burn. And when I can't get an answer in the morning because they haven't changed the message, it really aggravates me.
So you think there's a little bit of foot dragging that goes on there sometimes?
Oh, a lot. It's getting better because I've had conversations with them about it and indicated how extremely important it is for the public to be able to be allowed to do their job.
Yeah, to be able to clean up your property without smoking up the air, sure.
Yeah.
I wonder if it sometimes takes them longer to figure out how the wind patterns are going to be and how the weather will be working that day before they can actually change that. Did they mention that when you talked to the burn phone people?
Well, the people down at dispatch, the number you can call, the non-emergency number, are nice to talk to about this subject. Mm-hmm. And they explained to me they have to wait for the authorities that have to do the DEQ or somebody.
Oh, the DEQ. Oh, okay, so it's the state.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Don't quote me.
Okay.
But some authority that's supposed to know about it has got to first notify the next authority that can actually talk to us about it. And then they have problems a lot of times because they're busy.
And Greg, how did we ever survive this back from the days when people used to set tires on fire to smoke out the orchards?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm in trouble with some of these folks. They want me to write a book about my whole history because I ask too many questions and I show up. I carry equipment with me all summer long to fight fire. I've got a dipstick you use to play with on the river. I carry water. I carry shovels and rakes. If I see a column of smoke going up, I make a beeline. And I've been there before the fire department on occasions, more than once.
Good for you. I'm glad to hear that. Sorry for your trouble, but thanks for sharing it. I imagine there are some rural residents that share your concern. Let me go to Ed. Ed, you get to wrap the hour here. Good morning, even though we're already 7:03 on KMED, KBXE. What's up?
Well, Bill, I sit back and the ballots dropping are what triggers, you know, the impulse to address a couple of issues. and you listen to even the last call. And it's imperative, everybody, you do what it takes to be civically involved. Go down to the county clerk's office. The one lady who called, her ballot was late or whatever. Go down. If it isn't there by Wednesday, go down. Make the trip. Do what we got to do. Get that corrected. But go back to the voting aspect of this. We have to vote, and we have to do whatever it takes to get some of these things. You go back over the past few days, the conversations that you've had. A few days ago, Herman Bartzager from Grants Pass from Josephine County. You know, there was a indication that there was a problem people were having because they cut down blackberries, okay? And they were getting penalized for cutting down blackberries in a riparian area. Now, I sent you this stuff, and it can be forwarded to Herman. Blackberries, all four varieties of blackberries in Oregon are considered invasive species. That's the statement that's on their pages. So what? Now we look at the action of trying to penalize a landowner for taking care of his property at the appropriate time. And this is a point at which it's a contention that I look at, that we have to sit back and attack the process that they're using. And the process is incrementalism. It's combined with false direction about control in our lives. And the reality to it is that these intrusions affect all of us, every aspect of it. And I look at the entire thing, the whole criteria of this invasive species of blackberry, when somebody gets an opportunity to clear it. But there's a whole criteria of how, and they'll help you clear it. You know, it's not about, you know, it's just looking at the idea that they would want to penalize. So that's the individual within the system that is abusing his base of power. Now you go to the election process. Ultimately, it's the judges. Everything that you were just talking about, we have to start fighting back. We have to vote people in and get people that want to address this.
And when you have a governor who is appointing a judge in the final 60 days before what could have been a competitive election there, then you have to vote that person out. Not that I have an axe to grind against them, but it's about the process. The process that Governor Kotek engages in is putting a thumb on the scale, and it's corrupt, and it just needs to go away.
Well, we have to reintegrate ourselves in the process, and we do that by that method that you just described. In the past week, there's been this tremendous story about a salmon in the upper part of the Klamath River, and magically they were there with the cameras to see this struggling salmon or this salmon, you know, and all of these things. Well, I sent you a whole package of salmon. And if you know, since I was a kid, I mean, I look at this, it was taught to us about the genetic capability of salmon to return to the area they were spawned in. Now, if this salmon could not have spawned there,
how could it return there? How could it return? Why would it return? It would have no genetic memory of having spawned there, right?
That's exactly right. According to everything on all of the website, all of the information that's currently available, that salmon didn't have the capability to return to that area unless they had spawned it somehow in that area.
Now, there's a possibility, and I can't prove it one way or the other. I have a feeling that fish was probably transported up there somehow. And if you want to imprint Jenny Creek onto the memory of these fish and have them spawn, that might be fine. I was talking with Captain Bill Simpson about that yesterday, and he's going to join me about an hour from now, Ed. Because he said that the reds up there aren't ready. They aren't good for fish breeding, you know, at this point in time. But you know, this is the big lie or the distortion, and out comes the press release. You have to be able to see through this stuff and think common and use your common sense about that, because that fish may be in that Jenny Creek, but I doubt that fish swam through that area at Happy Camp, which we ended up testing the water from, okay?
Well, the only truthfulness to it all is that, yeah, there was a fish in Jenny Creek. Somehow there was a fish that they photographed there. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? But the reality to it is that we go back and understand that this is a travesty, and it's done through implementation of policy over the years to sustainable development. The reality to it is they lie to achieve a perception that they're doing it correctly. And I'm tired of the lies. I'm just so sick of the lies. What we have to do, we have to understand that every aspect of it's false information, the best available science that supports the consensus-based involvement of the nonprofit organizations. All of these things.
Who, by the way, have a vested interest in continuing that grift, right? So there will always be the continued created need. Ed, you and of course, the vote is one of our ways that we are involved in this. And to sit around and not participate in this one, can't be supportive of that. And I know that you aren't either, okay? Appreciate your call.
That's exactly right, Bill. Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. X, it is 9 minutes after 7. Ran a little bit long on the hour, but hey, there's a lot to talk about on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. And we have Mark DeYoung is going to join me in a few minutes, and he wants to be the next Josephine County treasurer. They have a elected treasurer there, and there's been some controversy going on there with the incumbent, and we'll talk to him about that coming up.
Lynn Barton here, Medicare advisor at Sky Park Insurance.